This is Mae Brussel, and this is the second half of broadcast number 781. In case you missed the first part of this program, I'm talking about the National Security Council, the power it has had over our country since World War II, and the hearings going on in Congress now about that power and the decisions, that decision-making process taken away from the Congress as the Constitution decided it should be balanced, a subject that I've been talking about for years that is finally coming to the attention of members of Congress. The Monterey Herald had a story this morning, National Security Council's power has grown over the past decades, and it explains how Ronald Reagan could go into Iran 4.5 years ago, 5 years ago, and the point it makes is that the position held by Zbigniew Brzezinski in the Carter administration upgraded the National Security Advisor, and it gave more power to the national security. After John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy were murdered, Henry Kissinger came in, and the old party politics was over, and as National Security Director, the power that was written into the book sneakily in 1947 could be used that would bypass Congress. This article says President Nixon stepped up the process, appointing Henry Kissinger to the post and combining the National Security Advisor's staff with that of the National Security Council. Nixon said in his memoirs that Kissinger recommended that I structure a national security apparatus within the White House that, in addition to coordinating foreign and defense policy, could also develop options for me to consider before making decisions. And this is the protege of the faceless Fritz Kramer, the partner of Daniel Graham of High Frontier. And after Nixon got to office, after his opponent in 1960, John Kennedy, was murdered, and his opponent in 1968, Robert Kennedy, was murdered, his electoral opponents, he was in, and Kissinger was the advisor. And then it became important that Kissinger move his offices and his advice into the White House, and that's where the foot really got in the door. Under this system, Kissinger dominated and eventually succeeded Secretary of State William Rogers. Even though they're close friends and William Rogers is on the board of Kissinger Associates, this was the transition of moving this power to Brzezinski and Kissinger, one from Poland and one from Germany. Under Fritz Kramer from Germany, and a family that goes back to chemicals, IG Farben, and Nazi Germany, moved into American intelligence and then picked up Henry Kissinger, who moves into this position through the process of these political murders. They got their power. The San Francisco Chronicle was talking about the end of the road for two persons from the National Security Council. And the interesting thing is that if there's scapegoats to fall, as Jim Garrison referred to, they get rid of their own patsies or scapegoats. Kissinger and Haig come out of this whole thing smelling like a rose. And if you haven't noticed it, watch television. I've taped the last 2 weeks, and Kissinger and Haig are the recipients of the accolades, and Haig is ready to run for president, and the others can be moved aside when they're caught. The Chronicle says that Navy Vice Admiral John Pondexter and Marine Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North can't count on as resuming active service if the Iran arms hostage uproar ends their tenure with the National Security Council. Both have made enemies at the Pentagon during their White House duty, and their military careers are dead end. That's because they work for those secret armies and not in the established Pentagon, which they came through but were put into a position separate from the Marines and the Pentagon with this other secret team. And that's why Alexander Haig jumped over 243 other persons to become a general. He didn't mingle with his classmates and work his way up. There was a story, front-page story, from the L.A. Times and Chronicle today, pressure for shakeup around Ronald Reagan. Critics take sharper aim at Shultz. And this is the important thing about this, and it was on television last week, yesterday, Sunday, referring to the NBC Meet the Press. And Meet the Press is run by Marvin Kalb. He is the protege of Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer. Marvin and Bernard Kalb are always around Kissinger, writing books about him, traveling with him. So Marvin Kalb gives Henry Kissinger a chance to talk about the Iranian crisis. And this is the quote in the newspaper. Republicans and Democrats, as well as former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, were directly or implicitly critical of George Shultz and in favor of bringing wiser men into the White House as presidential aides. Wiser men, meaning old Kissinger himself. This is a quotation of Kissinger. I am struck that in the middle of a crisis, the president is all alone on a parapet and almost none of his close associates are supporting him, not just on tactics, not even on general philosophy. Kissinger said on the NBC Meet the Press, the Secretary of State should support his president in a crisis. In the end, it is the duty of the Secretary of State to get along with the president and not the president to get along with the Secretary of State. Now, this is Henry Kissinger saying, I feel so sorry for you. Nobody sticks by you. And at the time of Watergate, he was in the Lincoln Room while poor Richard Nixon was on his knees praying and slobbering about relatives or family or crisis. And he was there, you know, holding his hand, and he set up the White House plumbers, the wiretapping, the bugging, the overthrowing of this country with the whole Watergate operations, with Alexander Haig moving in to take Robert Haldeman's job as Secretary of State and always willing to be in charge of the country when Reagan was shot in 1981, the vicar of Washington, Alexander Haig. So on Sunday television, you get Henry Kissinger saying, you really need the wise man, you know, I'm available if you need me, just quietly or secretly, and denouncing Shultz and saying, here's your poor president all alone, and anyone should support the president. Also, there was a story in the end of Jack Anderson column today about California mafia is missed. Donald Reagan's tenure with the White House staff has left the Reagan's old friends in California and the henchmen around Donald Reagan confused, and they have no longer have influence and policy options. Instead, Ronald Reagan is held literally, this is what Jack Anderson said, by a power grab by Donald Reagan, that the solution to problems is worked out with a yes or no decision, that they give him a yes or no, and he has to say it, and usually he goes along with Reagan. The president okays the suggestion. So that the power comes down to Ronald Reagan, true Reagan, the former Secretary of the Treasury under this president, who literally took over. If you saw him at the hospital when President Ronald Reagan had surgery, he took over, sets up his headquarters, and so forth. Well, there was an interesting background on Donald Reagan that you don't see very often in Executive Intelligence Review, December 13th, and this article by Kathleen Klinetsky claims that when Robert McFarlane left the National Security Council December 4th, 1985, and that's while they were deep into the Iranian processes, the balance of power in the Reagan administration dangerously was shifted against the national interests of the United States and in the White House put into the head of the Chief of Staff, Donald Reagan, along with Secretary of State Shultz, who he claimed worked with Reagan up to this point, and that they were running every aspect of the economic policy, U.S. foreign policy, and strategic policy, along with Treasury Secretary James Baker. And this article tells how President Reagan has abandoned day-to-day involvement in the running of the government. He leaves his decisions to Donald Reagan, and Secretary of Defense Caspar Weinberg is hanging by the post by his fingernails. This is December last year. And Donald Reagan has Admiral John Poindexter running the show, and Donald Reagan, and they literally are isolating the president and giving him orders, and that Reagan and Baker work with Federal Chairman Paul Volcker, and they're consolidating economic policy in their hands. And this article is about the dangerous combine of economic policy and foreign policy controlled by Donald Reagan. And the article is, the one subtitle is, Czar Reagan Makes His Move. Donald Reagan himself, not known for false modesty, told the New York Times December 5th that he views his role now as the bridge and counsel to the president on foreign policy, and that he is the one who will be making it and bringing it to him. And again, this is from the Kramer, Fritz Kramer, Daniel Graham, on down Henry Kissinger and Haig policy. The article goes on, Reagan is a prominent Catholic. He's part of a nest of self-styled prominent conservative Catholic laymen, which includes shipping magnate J. Peter Grace, head of the American Knights of Malta, and George S. Moore of First Bank, Boston Bank, as well as former Secretary of State Alexander Haig and ex-Treasury Secretary Bill Simon. All of them, Haig, Simon, Moore, Grace, All Knights of Malta. These gentlemen hired the services of Michael Novak, another Knight of Malta, recent resident Catholic at the influential American Enterprise Institute, to concoct stories of influencing national policy, economic policy, and so forth. And the article goes on that Reagan's close personal friend, the right-wing J. Peter Grace, has close family associates and businesses in the areas where foreign policy is made in Central America and around the country, and that Donald Reagan is making foreign policy and is closely linked to William Simon, Alexander Haig, George Moore, and J. Peter Grace, and that the influence in foreign policy is coming out of these people. Now, that is pretty heavy stuff. The Wall Street Journal had an article just this morning, Reagan's distrust of the establishment helped create his troubles over Iran. And in essence, what they're saying today goes back to the influence of the National Security Council in taking over the decisions of Reagan. It said Ronald Reagan's foreign policy is in deep trouble because of it is too homemade, which it isn't. It comes out for the Center of Strategic International Studies out of Georgetown. The Iran affair is devastating because it reveals the administration's naivete about Iranian policies. It is devastating because it reveals an impatient White House that dismissed the opinions of its own experts and its allies and bypassed Congress and hornswaggled the public. And this, again, is that secret seize me, as that the secret group that Michael Ledeen ran with Francesco Pazienza and Haig and Kissinger in Italy and in this country and goodness knows how many other countries. The article from the Wall Street Journal says, even after the fact, the administration has circled its wagons, tried to mount a public relations campaign. Instead of reaching to Congress and press and the public, the elected officials or so forth, Reagan has adopted the style of his chief of staff, Don Reagan. The real problem is deeper than the administration's mistakes or the attempt to explain them. It is Reagan's inner circle's contempt, and this is the key, for the past foreign policies, the people who made them, and the bureaucracies that carried them out. From the time that John Kennedy was murdered in 1960, this is in the article, this is May interjecting in here, through that time period up till Ronald Reagan was in power and starting with Richard Nixon, this team had full control. They were gaining control when Nixon was exposed at Watergate, and they were in tight with Ronald Reagan. Getting back to the Wall Street Journal, it says Mr. Reagan set out in 1981, when he was president, to change American foreign policy, not to management. He came to power convinced that the pillars of American diplomacy for the past two decades, that's 20 years, back to Kennedy, such as arms control and the pursuit of d'entente with the Soviet Union, were rusted and rotting. These policies had to be replaced and not just refurbished. He spurned experts from the mainstream of American foreign policy, from the center of his own party. He surrounded himself with his old friends from California, conservative ideologues who had been flocking in the banner since Goldwater's campaign in 1964. The administration discarded most of the people who managed strategic policy in this country for the last 20 years, said Richard Haass, a former Reagan State Department official who teaches at Harvard. The president is not hearing mainstream strategic advice, so he turns to radical ideas. He and his inner circle discovered they don't want to count on professionals at the State Department, at the Defense Department, at the Central Intelligence Agency. They want to convert Reagan to their ideas. And this is the Georgetown Center of Strategic and International Studies that has grabbed this president for theirs and went immediately into the evil empire. We won't talk with you. We hate you. And created incidences that we could blame the Soviet Union on, such as the Korean airline downing that, to get the weapons that these people want and need, the deployment of atomic missiles, of neutron bombs, and so forth. The Wall Street Journal says, we asked the State Department for 2.5 years to find somebody to talk about Iran, according to the White House officials, and they didn't want to go along with what we were doing. So the administration cooked up their secret diplomacy with Iran, which was devised by Robert McFarlane, John Poindexter, over the objections, and not behind the back of Secretary Shultz and Weinberger, who knew about it. After Congress took the CIA off their case, Mr. Reagan's policy towards Nicaragua was run for 2 years out of the White House. And they'll have to get onto that after they do Iran. that they have been running the White House. Now, in 1981, Covert Action had an article by Fred Landis titled The Right's Revenge, The Spies and Reagan Victory, the October 22nd Movement. And this is very important to understand the way these people manipulated the elections, the Cuban Missile Crisis, the murder of Salvador Allende, the killing of political leaders, and getting Ronald Reagan to office. And he was only in office, sworn in January, and this article was written in April 1981 called the October 22nd Movement. And then if I have time later, or maybe next week, I'll go into Don Fried's article. A friend, a long listener to World Watchers, reminded me, was in the same Rebel article that I wrote for Rebel in November, it was 1983. Don Fried's story, A Question of Treason, How Ronald Reagan Sabotaged the Iranian Hostage Rescue Mission. The Iranians Knew We Were Coming. This is an important story of how elections are won or manipulated and how the intelligence community, the Georgetown Center that runs the National Security Council, affects the candidates in office and how they manipulated to get them into office and finally got Ronald Reagan. This article by Fred Landis, as I say, was written April 1981. He says, the election of Ronald Reagan, November 4th, 1980, was not only a victory for the moral majority, in many respects, the long-planned triumph of a cabal of renegade intelligence officers dissatisfied with trends in foreign policy and manifested themselves in during the Carter administration. And the target of this group, these cabal, and I don't agree that just renegade. I think that they're a tight-knit group that does use our agencies, and the agencies know it. The target of the group wasn't just the White House, which is now under the control of Ronald Reagan, as I say, but most important, congressional committees that supervise foreign policy and the administration's transition team for foreign policy. The group comprised of former CIA officers and agents run from the back rooms of the Defense Department and manipulate the foreign policies and the defense teams that would be appointed by the president after the Ford and Carter years. Some of the intelligence officers were forced to retire after the Senator Frank Church's investigation of the intelligence communities, but they operate out of three interrelated Washington-based organizations, and these are the ones that are the backbone of the operations of the national security. One is the initials are AFIO, the Former Intelligence Officers, the Association of Former Intelligence Officers. The other is the Center of Strategic and International Studies, and the third is the Heritage Foundation. One tip-off that an intelligence operation was taking place under cover of the electoral campaign when Jimmy Carter ran against Ronald Reagan was the term disinformation. It's an intelligence word that describes overt attempt to manipulate informational environment of a selected target group by such actions as planted stories, selected leaks, rumors, forged documents, in this case, the election campaign. They couldn't shoot Jimmy Carter and let Ronald Reagan come in successfully after Robert and John Kennedy were killed. So the disinformation campaign was used in order to manipulate the current president into office. And the article cites examples of disinformation about Billy Carter that was managed by Michael Ledeen, the Cartergate stories, and Michael Ledeen set up the meetings in Iran of Robert McFarlane as an agent of the Mossad working with them. This article says hundreds of articles were planted to create artificial crisis atmosphere, that the Soviets were a threat to the United States, that they were planning World War III, that they back international terrorism, that they have moles in the CIA, that they have penetrated the United States media. To promote the disinformation, there was Robert Moss and Arnaud de Borchgrave. He, since this article was written, became the editor of Reverend Moon's Washington Times, and they used techniques and disinformation through the entire electoral process to get Ronald Reagan in. Now, the editor of Heritage Publications was Robert Moss, who was instrumental with CIA disinformation in Chile when Salvador Allende was murdered and the government was overthrown. And the editor of the Georgetown Center for Strategic and International Studies was their chief disinformation in Italy in 1976, and later we saw with Aja at the time of the Pope shooting in the 80s. It was Michael Ledeen. And Robert Moss and Michael Ledeen became the experts on Euro-communism, Euro-neutralism, and terrorism, and so forth, coming out of the Georgetown Center and working, Robert Moss with one, the Heritage Group, Ladeen with the Georgetown Center, Du Boschgrave, and then after the elections of Reagan, moving into the Times. The most virulent elements within this brotherhood of persons manipulating the country, the October 22nd movement it's called, included David Attlee Phillips, who headed the Institution or Organization of Retired Agents, Richard Helms, who was our ambassador to Iran and who destroyed the records on mind control that the government was examining or hoped to examine. He was deputy of the CIA and then became a CIA director. Richard Nixon was part of the inner team. Henry Kissinger, Alexander Haig, and the late Thomas Karamessines and Ray Klein. Klein is very much involved with John Singh Laub right now in the Philippines and down with the Contras and with every covert action that the National Security Group or this inner team have done. Ray Klein is part of it. And, of course, as soon as Nixon was in and Kennedy was murdered, then Kissinger could restructure the National Security Agency. David Attlee Phillips, Richard Helms, Richard Nixon, Henry Kissinger, Alexander Haig, and Thomas Karamessine, and Ray Klein. And this article states that the history of secrecy and deception in the United States policy over the last decade is largely the history of these individuals. And I bring it up now, this article that was written in 1981, because Kissinger wants to become the advisor again, Haig wants to run for president, Richard Nixon is being glorified and touted around as a great person in foreign relations and foreign policies. Richard Helms is on national television. These people have not faded away, and no matter what the fights are in the White House now, whether it's McFarlane or Poindexter or North and so forth, these people stay on top and nobody can touch them. No matter what you do, they are not touchable, and they have been in power since the two Kennedys and Martin Luther King were killed and since heads of other countries were killed, and they have their power today. This article says, examining the secret wars they had in Chile, Cuba, Vietnam, with Watergate, where they removed the president at that time, in Iran, or in the 1980 election campaign, they used the date October 22nd as a starting point. The article says, behind his desk, it's a gold calendar commemorating this date, placed there by President Kennedy, this is for the CIA director, is an award for the CIA's role during the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. The date Kennedy and the CIA felt that they had regained the honor they had lost in the Bay of Pigs. And this article goes on to tell how the Cuban Missile Crisis was created by David Phillips of the intelligence community for his own use and for the United States and the role it had in the murder of John Kennedy. The article says, Robert Moss is the hitman for the October 22nd movement now in 1981, as he was earlier in Chile. Moss, the author of a CIA-financed book about Chile, that in itself is not saying a great deal. The CIA admitted to financing over 1,200 books and some categories such as Chile under Allende. Of all the covert operations uncovered during the Senate investigations in 1975-76, the most secret and most sensitive, it touched all the nerve spots, CIA assassinations, CIA disinformation, CIA use of the media. Only seven individuals had prior knowledge to all of this. And this was David Attlee Phillips, Richard Helms, Richard Nixon, Henry Kissinger, Alexander Haig, Thomas Karamessine, and Ray Klein. There are many examples of the significance of the October 22nd movement, and incidentally, they cite October 22nd, 1970 in Santiago, Chile, the date that the chairman of the Chilean Joint Chief of Staff, General René Schneider, was assassinated, and it was the first political assassination in Chile, and it set the date later for the assassination of Salvador Allende when they got rid of Mr. Schneider. The other dates on October 22nd, they refer to David Attlee Phillips, who was behind the Cuban missile crisis. A great deal of information has come out about his activities. And before the House Select Committee on Assassinations, the man interviewing him, Gates Alfonsi, later wrote an article in Washington Magazine, and he tells about Mr. Phillips and how a person working with him in Cuba recognized him in Dealey Plaza after John Kennedy was killed. A particular witness, Mr. Veciano, saw Bishop in Dallas in Texas in September 1963, pardon me, not the day Kennedy was killed, but some with Lee Harvey Oswald in September 1963 and felt that David Attlee Phillips had a role in this particular assassination. He sued a lot of people who said that, but just seeing with Oswald doesn't mean he had a role, but he was in charge of a lot of disinformation information at the Cuban Missile Crisis. During the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis, Phillips was chief of covert action in Mexico City. He was in charge of the Cuban operations. Fonzie spoke of notes about his relationship with the Alpha 66, created for President Kennedy before, during, and the Cuban Missile Crisis, and those activities were planned by Maurice Bishop. They became the notorious anti-Castro Cubans and were, and this article goes into the relationship of them to disinformation to embarrass Kennedy publicly and to move him against Fidel Castro, which Mr. Veciano now admits was done to instigate and put us on the brink of war with Russia and also later to try and embarrass Kennedy. They also notice that Bishop has a morbid sense of history or historical irony. This article says he selects the dates for operations based on the anniversary of some psychologically important date, such as October 21st or October 31st. Now, that's interesting because I see coincidences of names and dates and don't think they're coincidences at all. They cite the October 22nd, 1972 trucker strike in Chile that was set up by the Central Intelligence Agency that called for the resignation of Allende. It was David Phillips' Operation Instructions and Assembly that did that. October 20th, 1973 was the Saturday Night Massacre at the Watergate when Alexander Haig fired Special Prosecutor Archibald Cox on the orders of Nixon, and Haig was Chief of Staff. October 31st, 1974, the assassination of Carlos Prats. General Pratt had been General Snyder's successor under Allende while in exile in Buenos Aires, Argentina. His car was blown up by Michael Townley and Juan Bulnes. Bulnes was indicted and Townley walked off later to murder, have a role in murdering Orlando Letelier and Ronnie Moffat in Washington. And October 31st, 1977, the Helms plea in the Halloween massacre, the day that Richard Helms pleaded no contest in federal court, that he had lied under oath, got a slap on the wrist, that he was involved with CIA activities in October of 70. And the date October 22nd to October 31st is cited in this article over and over. And the important thing is that these persons named, like David Attlee Phillips, Richard Helms, Richard Nixon, Henry Kissinger, and Alexander Haig, and the late Thomas Karamanlis, are very important, and Ray Klein, into the very activities you see in Iran today, the role of these people, and in Central America, Nicaragua, and so forth. The article describes David Phillips as retired from the CIA in 1975 when he formed the Association for Former Intelligence Officers and has contact with them and lobbies full-time for the CIA. Ray Klein was director of research at Georgetown Center. He's still there. He was on television telling about his friendship with Reinhard Gehlen one evening at the time of some hearings regarding Nazis and the Defense Department. He is in charge of research at Georgetown Center. As I said, a large number of the CIA, National Security Agency, and State Department warriors are in residence right at Georgetown Center. It is the home for the people and associates that are moving into the Reagan administration and having control over the intelligence and national security transitional teams. This was written in 1981, and in 1986, you see, in fact, how they did it. The Georgetown Center harbors many of the top officials of national security apparatus, particularly at the time of the Chile campaign, including Henry Kissinger. This article goes on to say Richard Nixon has recently been credited, this is in 1981, as the architect for the selection of Alexander Haig as Secretary of State under Ronald Reagan, and pulled from this same group from the national security, the protege, again, of Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger. And this Georgetown Center is so important. I don't want to brush off these people quickly because each one of them deserves an hour of description by themselves. But this was written in 1981, I repeat again. And this was an article that came out just 2 months after Ronald Reagan took office. And these are the people that are being examined now before Congress finally about who makes foreign policy. But even their names aren't thrown out. They're protected. And you hear the name Schultz, or you hear the name Weinberger, or you hear the name Poindexter, or you hear North, or you hear McFarland. but you don't hear the top people above who can bring in other people to take their place. I am running out of time now and have to conclude. I want to go back to this article again and finish it next week. It's very, very important, describing what was happening in Washington in 1981 and then what is happening now. In the meantime, this is Mae Brussel. I'll be back with you next week. And to continue along these lines of the people behind the Congress and the presidency, who really runs America? Information.